Welcome to Market View with Ike Iosa and Friends. This show that not only reveals and analyzes the inside story on today's market news, but also uncovers the areas where investors can make money right now.
Awesome. Good morning. Mike Iosa is your host for my very good friend, Mr. Jim Walls. Hi, Jim. How are you?
I'm doing good, Ike. How about you?
I'm doing well, and I was really looking forward to speak with you today. We have lots of stuff to talk about, starting with the latest great example of the market's ignorance and misconception. You and I share the belief that the market is no longer a discounting mechanism, looking simply at price, believing that the market is telling you something or assuming that the market knows something and it is conveying that knowledge through movement of price. Most of the time, you will be disappointed. And I'm saying this because just a few months ago, the market was telling us we were going to have 7 rate cuts. Well, I guess the market didn't know, did it?
No. And again, when you say people, I think you should just...
Wall Street.
Put that Wall Street, yeah.
I mean, Wall Street people.
Call it as it is. And Wall Street, again, back in January of 2022, was looking for 3 rate increases for all of 2022, even though the CPI had already come in and was above 7%, and Powell had said, no, inflation is not going to be transitory after all. So, but you're right. On CNBC, who I always have running in the background, it always... like, well, the market's looking forward. It's a discounting mechanism, and it's telling me. And it's like, it may be telling you something, but it also sometimes speaks with a forked tongue. And sometimes that message may not, you know, it may be more like the Tower of Babel, you know. So, but yeah, it's irony that we've gone from 6 cuts down to now maybe 2. And who knows? You know, that very well may change in coming weeks and months. So, yeah.
All right. Well, let's take a look at our first chart, the CPI headline.
Okay. So, one thing I'll mention, and I know you'll put it on your website, I went into a great detail about inflation and the April macro tides.
Yes.
And was expecting the CPI to come in hotter than expected and the markets would react negatively. So, for your faithful listeners, send me an email, jimwelshmacro@gmail.com. I'll send you the April macro tides, and you can see kind of the detail behind all this good stuff. So what happened, you know, the point being is that Powell and many Fed speakers have been saying, we just need the confidence that inflation is trending down towards 2% in order to cut rates. They're not going to wait for it to get to 2%, which then, again, emphasizes the word confidence. You know, if it's trending down and you feel confident, hey, at 2.5 or 2.6, you might say, you know what, I think we're in good shape. So these numbers are important because it will impact how confident most of the FOMC members feel. So the point in terms of the CPI, back in late 22, you can see the 3 and 6 month annualized rates. So they took the 3 month change, you know, what has the CPI done in the last 3 months, and then multiplied by 4 to get the annual, right? So in late 2022, the 3 and 6 month dropped below the annual rate. And as you might remember, and I'm sure you do, like in October of last year, the numbers came in really good. And, you know, they impacted, I believe, people's perception about what the Fed would be doing. And then the December FOMC meeting, you know, you had Goolsbee down at, you know, looking for like 6 cuts, and, you know, there was all of a sudden, oh my God, they're going to be cutting rates. And sure enough, that spawned the whole idea of, well, we're going to get a lot of rate cuts. Point being is when you look at this chart, you can see the 3 and the 6 month now are above the 12 month. And all the people who were, you know, walking around waving a victory lap flag, you know, 6 months ago, I don't see those people touting the 3 and 6 month annualized rates now. The point more than anything is the Fed isn't going to draw much confidence from these numbers, obviously. And that's why Wall Street's this, you know, the last couple of days, they're like, all of a sudden, instead of six cuts, they're all dialing it back to one or two.
Can you please explain for our listeners what the super core is?
Yeah. Well, the super core, that is something that Powell kind of created about a year or so ago. And it really relates to shelter. So you have owner's equivalent rent and rents within the consumer price index. And shelter makes up about 40% of the CPI. The PCE, I think, is down around 15%. So big difference. But there's a huge lag in terms of how shelter costs are measured in the CPI hike. And so what Powell came up with is, okay, we know there's this huge lag that's going to keep inflation as measured by the CPI elevated for longer because of that lag. So his idea was, I'll just remove the things that relate to shelter and housing and see what's left. And it's kind of a similar picture in the sense that, you know, the 12-month came down noticeably, but all of a sudden, the last 3 to 6 months, things are popping. And, you know, if you take the 3-month annualized, it's at 7.8% versus the 12-month annualized is at 5%. So again, this pinpoints that services, ex-shelter, is really the last mile in terms of getting inflation down. Again, these numbers aren't going to give the Fed much confidence.
Okay, how about the PPI?
Well, the PPI is important, Ike, because some of the components feed into the PCE. So it's kind of gained some stature over the last 6-12 months. And, you know, after the bad CPI, people were bracing for, oh my goodness, the PPI, if it comes in bad. Prior to the announcement, the S&P futures were down more than 30 points. The expectation was that it was going to be up 3/10. When it came in, and only up 2/10, even though the annual rate increased from 1.6 to 2.1, it's like, oh, thank goodness, the month-over-month number only was 0.2, not 0.3, and that's partly why the market rallied. But a big reason for why it was 0.2 instead of 0.3 was gasoline prices. So all these metrics use seasonal adjustments. That's to smooth out, you know, like in the, you know, at Christmas time, everybody goes shopping, and so retail sales balloon in December, whereas most other months it doesn't happen. So they use seasonal adjustments to try to smooth this stuff out. Well, the seasonal adjustment for March in the PPI turned a 6.3% increase in gas prices to a 3.6% decline. That's why it was down. So again, what that implies is, since we know gas prices have continued to go up so far in the month of April, you know, the PPI next month is likely to play catch up to what we're seeing. But this was why the market initially, you know, as I said, the futures were down 30 points. After this was announced, the S&P came back to be even to up a little bit. And then there was one other thing we're going to talk about that really helped the market rebound on Thursday significantly. But it was more a sigh of relief, Ike, than anything else regarding the PPI.
The expectation of fewer interest rate cuts coupled with geopolitical instability has helped the dollar quite a bit. And I believe the key level to pay attention to is 105, because if it goes above 105, then it could easily move further to 107, 108. What are your thoughts on the dollar?
Well, late December, I thought the dollar was bottoming. And because, as you noted, you know, the idea of 6 rate cuts was ludicrous, I thought as those got dialed back, the dollar would rally. And we saw a nice rally from late December to, you know, 104, whatever the number is. It's small and I can't really read it. but then there was a pullback. I thought we would see the dollar rally up towards 105.65 when the CPI report came out, for the very reason is that would cause more of the expected rate cuts by the Fed to be dialed back. Right after the CPI, it got up to 105.53. Then this morning, on Friday, April 12th, you know, reports, Israel saying, hey, we're expecting Iran to do something in the Middle East, to attack us, and so forth. And that also gave the dollar a real tailwind. There's a couple price projections based on the initial rally from the low in December to the high a couple months ago that would lift it up to 106.71. And then from the most recent low, two legs being equal, gets you up to 106.62. So getting up to those levels, I think, are certainly doable. I still believe the economy is going to slow as we approach mid-year and slow more noticeably in the second half of this year, which will reinvigorate, I think, legitimately, the prospect for Fed rate cuts, which I think would undermine the dollar. So I'm looking for the dollar ultimately to drop below the lows we saw last year, just below 100, predicated on weakness in the U.S. economy. So getting above that high at 107 and change last October, that would alter the outlook. And again, it could be altered because of geopolitical issues rather than inflation and monetary policy. So for now, I think there's more upside. But after that, I think the dollar is going to roll over and head south. But we'll see.
What are your thoughts on the yield on the 10-year bond? It seems to me that 4.5% is significant resistance. If we get above 4.5%, then we can see a rally up to 4.75, maybe 5%.
Well, a couple things. You know, again, late December, I thought Treasury yields are headed up. You had five waves down. If you look at the 10-year chart, you can see in red, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. So it's like, okay, we're completing something here. We're going to see yields rise. The backstory will be that we're not getting fixed rate cuts, and that would give a lift not only to the dollar, but in a sense, Treasury yields might be what helps the dollar move up. Over the last few weeks, my expectation was we'd see a hot CPI, we'd see Treasury yields rally, and the target on the 10-year was somewhere between 450, 461. It got up to, I think, 459-ish. So we're at a point where potentially yields can be topping out. I don't think they're going to turn on a dime unless there's some real geopolitical event. Most likely it'll be some chopping before they come down. But predicated on the expectation the economy is going to slow materially before year end, I think the 10-year yield will drop below the low we saw in December. So we're at a critical juncture, to your point. And that trend line, obviously getting above that black trend line that it kind of tagged this morning, would be a warning that, wait a second, yields are going to continue to climb. So again, I think the key is going to be the U.S. economy. As we all know, everyone thinks the economy is not going to have a material slowdown. We don't have to worry about a recession. I think that's misplaced. I think we will see a market slowdown. So that's why, you know, intermediate term, I think this is a buying point.
Well, and that brings to TLT. Now, my thoughts on TLT is that there is significant support in the 90 to 88 zone. And the odds favor that, you know, we get the bounce from here. But if TLT broke below 88, then it can go much lower. What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I think you're right, Ike. Again, if you look at TLT from last October, in October 23rd, I sent out a letter saying it's time to buy TLT, and my expectation was, again, that we were going to see yields come down. You can see in green, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 into late December. So that was obviously the reciprocal of the 10-year Treasury yield chart, and TLT rallied from 82 and change up to 100. The expectation was we would work our way down, and, you know, to your point, to me, the 50% retracement of that rally was 91.50. The 618 is 89.35. Yesterday, got to 89.51. So you're right, Ike. We're at this area that should be support between 88 and above. To me, potentially the pattern's been complete. What this implies is TLT basically rallied about $18 from the low last October. If it bottoms near this 88 to 89 level, and you have an equal rally, we're talking, and I've been saying this for a while, 105, 109 would be the initial price target, predicated again on the idea that the economy is going to slow down. But the technical pattern supports that outlook. So I think this is a good entry point for TLT. as you've noted, and the momentum, the red and green lines. The red is a 5-day exponential. The green is 13, and that's really a nice trend following tool. It's short term in nature, but as you can see, if the TLT came off the lows of last October, the relationship with the red line staying above the green, held all the way through, then it rolled over. So near term, what we want to see is TLT start to base and ultimately rally enough that initially the red line gets above the green line, and then ultimately the big test will be that downtrend line. Getting above that downtrend line will kind of say, the decline, it's confirmation that the move down in TLT is over. So that's my expectation of what's going to happen, but now it has to manifest.
Okay. How about our next chart, federal funds rate versus the S&P?
Yeah, so this is, we were talking earlier about the Fed funds futures and how Wall Street put so much emphasis on them, and yes, they were looking for 6 cuts and so forth. So what this chart shows, what the Fed funds futures are projecting, and you can see last year going into the low in October, the correlation was extremely tight. Then expectations for rate cuts started to build, and the S&P rallied. The blue line, which is the Fed funds futures, rallied. Then we get to the end of the year, people are looking for 6 rate cuts, and obviously that gets dialed back, and yet the S&P has continued to move up. The main reason why is because of the belief the economy is not going to be going into a recession. So, hey, we don't get the cuts we were hoping for, that's okay. As long as the economy is doing good, earnings are going up, this is all a good outlook. So that, I think, where the market could be vulnerable is if that narrative is challenged by incoming data at some point in time in the next 3 months, 5 months. Oh, gee whiz, the economy is starting to slow a little bit more than expected. We'll see that gap narrow with the S&P coming down and the Fed funds futures begin to price in what I would expect to be legitimate rate cuts by the Fed in response to a slowdown in the economy. But this underscores, in my view, the risk that the market's been ignoring, that they're not going to get the rate cuts, predicated on the economy, which just raises the stakes that the economy has to stay good.
Okay, our next chart is NVIDIA, and I would like to make a comment. A few weeks ago, right before NVIDIA's earnings report, Goldman Sachs opined that NVIDIA was the most important company in the world. First point is that just a couple of years ago, the most important company in the world at the time was Tesla, and it really hasn't worked out all that great the last couple of years. Second point, when a Wall Street analyst resorts to that kind of hyperbole to describe a company, it's just bullshit.
One needs to question it aggressively. My mom would be proud of me because I'm using a nice way of saying what you said. But two things. You have key reversals in NVIDIA, March 8th and then April 4th. All right? I think that's important. What's interesting, Ike, is you can see on April 9th, NVIDIA closed slightly below that red trend line. What happened on April 10th? Morgan Stanley says, you know what? We think it's going to 1,000 instead of 795. So the market gets beat up pretty good in response to the CBI report, but it doesn't really pull back that much. And then we see on Thursday a huge rally. NVIDIA was up 4%. So in terms of people saying, God, the market got beat on the CPI, finished down 49, and then it rallies and finishes up 38 points on Thursday right after. What the heck is going on? Well, as I said, the PPI was the first part of it. The second part was the strength in NVIDIA, because that lifted the semiconductor index and so forth. And a lot of people, to your point, Ike, it's the most important stock. And if it's doing well, then I want to be in the market. Now, the irony is, at the end of the day yesterday, the S&P is up 38 points, and there were only 40 more stocks up than down. In other words, it was like 1,511 to 1,470 or something, whatever the number was. There was only 40, right? Which underscored that internally, people were putting way too much emphasis on NVIDIA. So I believe key reversals matter. And to me, that suggests NVIDIA, after this knee-jerk bounce by institutions listening to Morgan Stanley, is going to be vulnerable to a larger decline.
How about our next chart, the S&P high-low indicator?
Yeah, so the high-lows, they lag a little bit, but they're a great trend following. So again, what I'm using here is the number of new highs each day minus new lows, and then taking that difference and creating a 5-day exponential and a 21-day exponential as registered by the green line. So simple, you know, babe, when the red is above the green, well, that's obviously important. As you get reactions in the market and then rebound back up, you get a pullback and then it rallies to higher high, you then can start to draw a trend line. So that first, on the left-hand side of the trend line from last year, from March through August. And what we can see is the new highs rolled over and then in early August broke that blue trend line. Same thing is happening here. We're in, on April 2nd, the red dropped below the green. The last couple days, both lines have broken below that blue trend line. For me, this just suggests that the market is more vulnerable to a larger pullback, more selling than what we've seen in months. And again, I thought the trigger would be the CPI report. So far, that seems to be playing out. You know, this is just a trend following device. And, you know, the message to me is, okay, folks, brace yourself.
And that brings us to our next chart, the S&P.
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, the S&P drops, you had a key reversal in the S&P on April 4th, March 8th. So did the Dow, the transports, the not the Russell 2000, but the Qs, the semiconductor index. So all of those have had two key reversals. On April 4th, the New York Composite and the Value Line Composite joined in. So now every major average has had at least one key reversal. So after that sharp break last week, on April 4th, the S&P rebounded to, I think, 5225, 5221, and then the high yesterday was 5211. So that red the upper red horizontal line around 5225 is, I think, important, Ike, in terms of, okay, I don't think we're going to go back above that, but if it did, it would say, all right, we're going to a higher high. We're coming down. I put these charts together very early this morning, right after the market opened. The 5100 level is kind of important, as you can see, the lower red trend line.
Yeah.
Taking that out, to me, opens the door directly to more weakness. My assumption here is I potentially, if nothing bad happens over the weekend in the Middle East, you're going to get a relief rebound. Oh my God, you know, nothing bad happened. But let's step back for a second. The reality is that sooner or later, Iran or Hezbollah is going to respond to the attack that killed some Hezbollah leaders. So it doesn't happen this weekend, doesn't mean it's not going to happen down the road a piece, whether it's next Wednesday or 2 weeks from now. So to me, I think any bounce off of 5100 is likely to run out of gas, and then I think we're going to see a reversal lower and potentially drop down towards that 5049.50 level is going to be possible over the next 6 weeks.
Okay. And that brings our last chart, which is gold. Gold has benefited greatly from fears regarding major escalation in the Middle East. And if somehow the conflict continues to be contained, then gold will be vulnerable to a very sharp pullback. On the other hand, if all hell breaks loose, then gold can continue to rally much higher.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like they had to do something. But is it just enough to show that they're manning up to Israel,
yeah,
now, as opposed to we're going to raise you one?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I think you're 100% right. And gold is having a pretty good reversal today. In this past Monday's weekly technical review, my thought was that we'd have a pullback in gold based on the CPI, which occurred. It was pretty brief and somewhat modest. And then another rally, which would, from my point of view, would represent wave five and set the table for a pullback. So I think gold is either made the high today or soon will, and we're going to have a pullback. I thought we'd see something north of 2,300 this year. It's happening much quicker than I expected. I think that this extended move, which I think is what gold has had, is an extension. Instead of a five-wave rally, it's a nine-wave rally, is bullish longer term.
But I agree.
The enthusiasm is built, and I think a number of the Wall Street firms have raised their target now on gold to 2,700 today. So it's kind of like, okay, want to fade them in all likelihood. So I think you're right. The table's getting set up here that a pullback in gold is coming. It may last for 3 to 6 weeks. And then I think if I'm right about the economy slowing and the Fed then actually coming to the point of lowering the funds rate, I think that would be pretty bullish for gold.
Tim, anything else you'd like to add?
Nope, we covered a lot. As always, enjoy talking to Ike and appreciate the opportunity.
Jim, thank you. Have a great weekend.
You too.